Good morning, everyone here in New Haven. Welcome to the first episode of Infrastructure Thursdays here in a long time. We're glad to be back. I'm Giovanni Zinn, the city engineer. Doug Houselading, the director of transportation, traffic, and parking, will be joining us shortly here. With us today is our special guest, Dawn Henning, a project manager in the engineering department.
Hello, all.
So, you know, usually here on Infrastructure Thursdays, we like to talk about the various projects that are going on around the city and things that we're working on. You know, we just came through a pretty busy hurricane season here in the Atlantic, you know, a lot of discussion around coastal resiliency and things that we're doing around that. Dawn has been working a lot on various things here to make New Haven both more resilient and a lot greener. The green stormwater infrastructure program of the city, for example, is one of the things that Dawn is has been spearheading and doing a great job on. Maybe you can give our listeners a little taste of what green stormwater infrastructure is.
Oh, okay. Well, green stormwater infrastructure, I guess you can look at it from two perspectives. The rainwater that lands in our inland areas, we like to capture that before it gets into the storm sewer system. Keeping it out of the storm sewer system relieves some of the flooding that we've been experiencing inland. So we've been planting, you may see a couple of them downtown on Chapel Street, planting these gardens along our public right-of-way, where we capture the water from the street into the gardens and infiltrate it into our beautiful sandy soils that we have here in New Haven, that keeps it out of our storm sewer system. We are planning on doing a lot more of those in the near future.
Yeah, actually, I heard a rumor that we're actually building some right now. Where are those?
Oh, in Clinton Ave and Fairhaven, we're doing some traffic calming, and we're incorporating green infrastructure into our traffic calming.
So talk a little bit more about, I think we're doing something a little new this time on Clinton Avenue for our green stormwater infrastructure. If you can, a lot of our bioswales previously in rain gardens have been at the side of the road. These are actually out in the middle of the road.
Yeah, well, in order to calm traffic, we've been bumping out and shortening the length that pedestrians need to cross the street while also calming traffic through those intersections. But what happens is we intercept the water. The water can no longer get to the catch basin and into the sewer system. So instead of spending lots of money on hard infrastructure, we've been using bioswales and rain gardens to capture that water and infiltrate it. And only in a heavy storm would it end up going into our storm sewer system.
Yeah, and I think this is a great example of how using green stormwater infrastructure in good design both creates a better project. You know, one that has a little more green space on the street, is visually attractive, and also saves money at the end of the day. It's a lot less expensive to put in these bioswales than it is to dig up the more of the road and put more pipes in and everything like that. Our other co-host, Douglas Houselading, has joined us here on the voice of New Haven's infrastructure, WNHH. It's on 103.5 on your FM dial and streaming online at newhavenindependent.org.
Also on Facebook Live. Hi. Hi, Mom. Sorry for my tardiness, everybody. Dawn, Giovanni, thanks for covering for me, as always.
Well, we were just getting into talking a little about Clinton Avenue. Yep, we were talking a bit about the stormwater side of it, but maybe you can bring us up to speed on some of the...
No pun intended.
Right, no. Or bring the speed down, as it is, on some of the traffic calming features.
Oh, my God, we're nerds. No, so I think what's really great about Clinton Avenue, first and foremost, is the evolution of the project over the last 10 years. So as my heart rate stops, slows down a little bit, the project started a long time ago, a couple directors ago, a couple engineers ago, as a community development block grant funded project, taking a specific look at lower income neighborhoods and where infrastructure can help change community. And I think the CDBG program is one of those great investments from a federal government partners that we're seeing under threat in the last few years. But at the same time, what it did, 10 years ago, somebody applied for, I think it was $140,000 of grant funding, which really, when we took over about 3 years ago, that funding was still there, which shows you, shows everybody on the that's listening, and everybody talks about speed of projects, but when your bureaucrat is complaining about a speed of project, you know it's a problem. So we, you know, the evolution really started. Clinton Avenue has a bike lane, and the community development block grant funding application was for a bike lane on Clinton Avenue. Now the bike lane can be approved and we can have protection and whatnot. But when we started doing our outreach and engagement in Chatham Square Neighborhood Association, a Fairhaven community management team, hell, going door to door, remember the meeting in the park, you know, in Chatham Square Park and Dover Street.
Oh, absolutely.
As well as, what's the T intersection that had the family that was living there that was causing a bunch of, there's speed humps there now, but anyway,
yeah, I don't remember.
It's right off of Chatham Street, Chatham Square. But, you know, when we started looking at designs for this, I remember bringing the greenest, like literally green, not like, you know, sustainable green, but like the greenest drawings ever with like amazing community roundabouts that were like, you know, designed to slow and calm traffic and just make it so safe for everyone. The community was just like, absolutely not. That's stupid looking. And, you know, it took me about a year of failing to convince them. For me to realize and us to realize that they didn't want it and it wasn't right. And instead of focusing on the bike lane, let's focus on traffic speeds and let's focus on pedestrian crossings.
Right. And I think that, you know, one of the other things that community roundabouts kind of run into is the fact that we have buses and trucks. You know, a lot of things that works for cars that don't work for those two. And, you know, it's one of the challenges in an older urban environment is that you don't have the road widths and other and space, frankly, to put in some of the, what look like very pretty pictures in all of the design guides exactly. and manuals and everything. And, you know, we go to a national conference, everyone puts up their slide of their most beautiful thing. What they don't show you is the slides of the 50 places that they looked at this for and it couldn't fit it. But
exactly. Exactly. No, so I and what's out there now is sort of as you mentioned, the it's cheaper, it's more affordable, but it also dovetails two separate budgets into one principal mission, which is a healthier, sustainable New Haven where you can walk around safely and that your stormwater isn't flooding everywhere. You know, it's a new way of looking at doing projects, I would say, and one that we're really proud of.
Right. And
I'm really
proud
of it. I brag about you guys all the time.
Well, I think also, you know, when you look at what the improvements are on Clinton Avenue, we're looking at a couple of raised crosswalks. We're looking at a couple of raised intersections. Right. You know, I think using especially the green stormwater techniques and other things have helped us really bring the cost down a lot on these types of improvements. You know, when you look at Edward Street, for example, you know, I think that was, you know, a few $100,000 project in of itself. That was one. You know, here we got, you know, four raised elements and, you know, I forget how many bump outs exactly. I think we're up to more than that. We're probably up to 12 or so bump outs, I think, in the project and in an island. And all of that is, you know, in the low 300s. So it's, I think we've gotten a lot better and we have a lot more to go in driving the cost of some of these projects down and being able to deliver them faster.
So why was Clinton Avenue important for stormwater? I think it's something that I don't understand is that everything under the ground matters. And I know that I need to ask you guys, but you know, my training is all above ground, but underground, why did you think bioswales were important over on Clinton? Other than standard practice.
Well, I think it was a lower cost way of dealing with the stormwater
there
issues that we had. And you know, also that part of Fairhaven, I believe, is still in the combined sewer system. So it is diverting some water from that. But, you know, the real driving principle here is that we have a toolkit of ways to deal with stormwater. In this particular application, green stormwater infrastructure was the most cost effective and also the most technically effective way to handle it.
Well, and the most cost effective way to distribute a radio production is on WNH local radio here at 103.5 FM, WNHH, newhavenindependent.org, and streaming live at facebook.com.
The voice of New Haven's infrastructure.
You too. Well, I would like to add, though, that I think, like you're saying, people don't think about stormwater infrastructure because mostly it's underground. And I think bioswales elevate that and bring it into conversation. People may ask questions. Why did you do that? Why is that vegetated? Why is the curb cut here? And I think it allows us to have the opportunity to talk about issues we're having with our stormwater system, how it's important, and it kind of brings it to an elevated status. So, and the co-benefits of having planted space and cleaner air, cleaner water.
You know, at the risk of being a little too mushy here, you know, I think that having green infrastructure really starts a lot of conversations about where stormwater goes. You know, everyone knows what a catch basin is at some level, but everyone also forgets. You know, it's this sort of pit in the ground with a grate over the top. And where the water goes after that, well, nobody really worries about. And having this visible infrastructure that deals with stormwater, I think, really brings the conversation around stormwater. What can you do to protect stormwater quality? What can you do around your house to, you know, for stormwater and things like that? Brings those much more to the forefront.
Most definitely. Is there other, so from my perspective, and I know we have a question from Twitter about our bike lane construction projects and whatnot. Clinton Avenue is a bike lane. The bike lane's going back the way it is. You know, again, we wanted to focus over there on pedestrian safety crossings. We have a lot of policy priorities over there. I think we actually might hit what we call, you know, policy bingo. We have Safe Routes to School. We have the Clinton Avenue School, middle school. We have Safe Routes to Parks. We have Chatham Square Park. We have Safe Routes for Seniors. We have, because Mary Wade Home is right there and expanding. Safe Access to Transit. There is a bus line. Especially school bus lines. And I think, you know, for us, that's really a large portion of how we want to govern our work, which is what are the outcomes we're looking for? What are the policy points that we're touching on when we're doing this projects? And one of the challenges I think we have, and Giovanni and I have been lovingly debating all week, is how do we report these successes, and how do we grade ourselves on the work we do, and how do we report back to community, and how does community intertwine, you know, with all of this? Because at the heart, you know, we would have probably built a green bike lane if somebody asked me what to build on Clinton Avenue. And in the end, the community really wanted safe access for the park and safe crossings for their parents and better sidewalks.
Well, I think it also, you know, what we have here at the end of the day is a project that serves all of the different users of the road. You know, it really, the vertical elements, you know, the raised table and the raised crosswalks really do calm traffic and create a corridor effect of calming. You know, the pedestrian benefits with RRFBs at major crossings, with the raised crossings, you know, really helps the pedestrian be much more prominent in the streetscape, and people can see pedestrians a lot better. You know, and then even there are bike lanes on here, and you know, it'll be, having lower vehicle speeds is a big benefit to cyclists. You know, it is part of the network that we're building out throughout the city.
Mm-hmm. Other places we're really deploying green infrastructure. Every time I visit your office, I see a bunch of dots on a map done in the downtown. Yes. What do you got cooking in the downtown?
Well, CDBG-DR funding again.
I'm sorry. What type of funding is that?
Community Development Block Grant funding.
DR.
Disaster resiliency.
Perfect.
Disaster relief, I thought. Well, maybe one
or recovery. It's, you know,
right.
The three R's.
Exactly.
And so we have money to build more green infrastructure with a focus on reducing flooding in our downtown. Our downtown sewer system in particular has too much water going to it, in short. And so we need to reduce the amount of water going. If we can cut back on the water going to the sewer system, any other solution we're going to have to provide will be more effective, smaller, hopefully less expensive.
So
we have about 200 bioswales that we're planning on building throughout downtown within a 600-acre downtown sewer shed.
There's one more policy. Sorry, to go backwards. Safe Routes to Food. And the corner store at Dover and Clinton was a corner store in the Healthy Corner Store project at the Yale School of Public Health back then. Mm. It's a, anyway,
we're
sorry.
Four?
Give an encyclopedic knowledge of this stuff. I
five
just
for five.
Point that out.
I did used to work with that corner store as the Healthy Corner Store project manager, so it is cheating.
Oh, okay.
In this case, it is cheating. So 200 bioswales in the downtown, and that's going to help divert how much stormwater?
We estimated about 1 million gallons.
Right. So I
1 million gallons. For
well,
everybody
no,
on Facebook Live, you got a little.
Which is a...
You have to imagine a pinky if you're on the radio.
Right. So it is, you know, I think that it may even wind up being an underestimate because, again, it depends on the size of the storm and what your infiltration rates are. So, you know, you measure infiltration rates as inches per hour of water. And the way you test it is literally you dig a hole in the ground, you dump water in it, and you keep measuring every few minutes how far down the water's gone. And there's a whole fancy protocol around it, but it is literally that.
Like a government protocol and everything?
Oh,
like
I'm policies sure. There are all manu- sorts of
is there a manual?
Well, we're engineers, so we like to have very regular ways of doing things. One of the things is obviously in our development permit application process, we require applicants to retain the first inch of rain on site. And often that's done through infiltration systems under their parking lots. So anyone who goes in front of the City Plan Commission, which I sit on, knows that the first question they ever get out of their stormwater presentation from me is, "Hey, what was your infiltration rate?" The state of Connecticut stormwater manual says that the maximum that you can use for your calculations is 5 inches an hour.
Mm-hmm.
To give you 5 inches an hour is a very bad spot for infiltration in New Haven. We often typically get, actually, I think there was a project on Elm Street that came through last month. They were getting 70 something inches an hour. So, even at 5-10 inches an hour, which is what we're using for our calculations, we're getting somewhere equivalent of 1 million gallons of storage over an hour long storm. We think that the performance might even be better than that. And in fact, we've been working with Yale University and Quinnipiac University to do some. It's a very nice post there, Doug.
Sorry, check my tweet feed if you want to get in on the joke. Sorry about that.
We're working with Yale and with Quinnipiac to analyze the performance, get some real hard, research data on our performance or bioswale so that we can make a case to funding organizations like the state and the federal governments. Maybe Dawn, if you can touch a bit on what they've found so far.
Well, let me chip in and add one more question for Dawn to respond to, which is, so you're partnering with Yale and Quinnipiac, and I actually accidentally hijacked or crashed your party last Thursday or two Thursdays ago, where you guys were at Makehaven, also talking about other possibility and partnerships. Can you talk about like what the challenges that you're really facing and what the
that was
research...
gonna be the next segment?
Okay.
We'll give you a sneak peek. Get people excited to tune in. So, we've been partnering with the universities. Obviously, research is very important to us, and we can use that data to better further our goals. So far, I haven't heard from the Quinnipiac. I'm actually going to go to a poster presentation this month on what their results were, but they were looking at quantity and quality of the stormwater that's being captured by the bioswales. And Yale University, we don't have a particular number yet for how much water can be captured by a singular bioswale. It's actually a very difficult number to capture. And part of the problem is you can't just make it rain, and you need to capture data over a range rainstorms.
Because make it rain is a very funny colloquial term.
Yes, I know. So you can't make it
and
rain.
And in our industry, we can never make it rain.
No, that would be. So
invest in your government.
One of the surefire ways to cause a drought is to put sewer monitoring data or bioswale monitoring data, sensors into our system. And so we've had trouble collecting because we haven't had the rainstorm. When we have the equipment in to collect the data, we haven't gotten the rainstorms that we would like to see. Mm-hmm. So I guess to the second part of your question is that we are trying to find cost-effective ways to put a lot of sensors throughout our sewer system to capture data over a long term.
Right. So, I mean, one of the things that, as you look at stormwater systems, I think we've talked about this in previous programs, the way that engineers analyze them is we basically create a mathematical model of our stormwater systems and then run both the historic storms through and then these sort of synthetic storms that have certain shapes and profiles to them, and you build the certain standards related to these very specific synthetic storms. And you calibrate your mathematical model by having a lot of data on actual storms in the past to run through it, and then you sort of tweak the model to make sure that it reflects as accurately as you can what happened in a bunch of historic storms. And as Dawn referred to it previously, the typical way of doing it is that you pick maybe an 8-week period or something like that, where you spend $500 a week per sensor, having a consultant come in and put those in, and it, you know, the tens of thousands of dollars start running up very quickly. And if you're not lucky, which we are not, you wind up having some pretty small storms in those 8 weeks that you spent a ton of money on. And you know, so what we're trying to do now is find alternative ways to get data out of the storm system, and really in a sense disrupt how this is typically done. So one thing we've done is we've applied to the state of Connecticut for a grant to buy some of these sensors ourselves and actually use sensors that simply measure depth as opposed to depth and velocity. The theory there being that if we get a lot of information about depth, then you can interpolate some of the velocity stuff, you know, through mathematics, as opposed to having, you know, relatively few sensors that give you all three types of data. So it's kind of it ends up being a mathematical challenge. But, you know, very excitingly, we're going to be working with Makehaven to even drop that cost down by an order of magnitude, hopefully, take advantage of some of the new smart city and Internet of Things innovations that'll, you know, really create these distributed nets of networks of sensors to get a lot of data. And really the trickiest part of it is getting the data out of the manhole and back onto your network. And there's in recent years some new low power, long range radio technologies called LoRa. Of all things, long range, you know, wide area network. That allows you to, you know, have very long battery life on the sensors in the manhole. You know, it's at a lower wavelength. So unlike a cell connection, you can actually get out of the manhole without a fancy antenna, drilling an antenna out the side of it. And also, you know, you don't have a data charge every month. So we're very excited to work with Makehaven. You know, they really do a lot of fantastic stuff over there. It's a great opportunity to partner, and we really look forward to working together on it.
So in the downtown, we got about 1 million gallons of stormwater diverted.
That might be an underestimate.
That's in the future, yeah.
That is in the future.
So there are millions of gallons more where that came from, though.
So
that's
where's the water going to go, guys? It's got to go somewhere. If it's not going in the stormwater system, it's got to go somewhere.
It's going into the extremely porous soils under under New Haven.
Sorry. I was just trying to be stupid to like tee you up for very simple. It's going back into the, you know, the system. Yeah.
No,
and the
I
trees
know. We
and
think about
plants.
It all the time. We forget that not everyone else thinks about the sewer system all the time.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, if you think about it, that's where all the stormwater used to go before we paved and put roofs up everywhere. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. So to switch, because we do have a couple comments on Facebook, so shout out to Brian Tang, who's out there listening to us, Cody Freedom as well, wanted to answer. I know that Brian's been talking to us a little bit about and inquiring about the future of bike lanes right now. I know Mark Abraham said it on Twitter. He was interested in us talking about some of the projects. Now, our favorite, your favorite, everyone's favorite.
Your favorite and mine.
Edgewood Avenue Cycle Track. So in the hilarity that is our lives in this work, we received an award for Edgewood Avenue last week, even though we haven't constructed the traffic signals yet.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works.
Our traffic signal design received a nice little award, but the only award we really care about is actually riding our bikes on it. So I've been getting a lot of questions lately. Do you want to care to update where we are? Because
I have no answers. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, there's been some new pavement. So what are
right,
we going to do?
Right. So I think you know, we've sort of been stealthily. Maybe that's a bad word, but you know. We've done some as part of the city's paving program. We've done some repaving in preparation of the Edgewood Avenue cycle track going in starting next spring. In the I forget the limits on the eastern section east of the mall there, and the markings that are going down are actually the markings that will be permanently there for the cycle track. So. You know, it is work that has to be done for the cycle track, so it's kind of a soft launch to construction here on Edgewood Avenue. We really look forward to hitting that very hard. You know, other places that we're working, you know, Howard Avenue will be in construction next year as well. relatively similar to what's out there now, with some other some better intersections for cyclists and some protection at the intersections.
Let's pause there and talk about new stuff. So a lot of people want everything yesterday, and I am one of those persons. But we're out there doing a lot of new things with respect to the types of crossings we're doing. I had just somebody the other day come up and ask, you're going to put in a speed hump. What type of speed hump? And then he said, here are all the different types of speed humps I've seen in deployment, which is really great.
Right.
And some go out to the curb. Some are raised crossings. Some are tables. Some are RRFB. Some are bump outs with dip down. Some are bump outs with raised crossings. So we got the York Street mid-block crossing lately, right? We got the new Prospect Street crossings for the school, which were bump outs with at-grade crossings for the new residential colleges.
Yeah, that's a rather interesting design there.
We're going to come back to that offline, and I agree with you. And they also have two speed humps on Prospect Street now. But some of the bike lanes, some of the new designs that we've piloted in the last year, first ever pedestrian refuge islands. Congratulations, New Haven Engineering. The state of Connecticut's first ever pedestrian refuge islands with Long Wharf Drive. And
oh,
now,
right, yes.
Sorry, I had to tell you where they were.
Yeah, no, so, I knew where they, I know which ones you're referring to.
And then Howard Avenue, you're going to do some floating islands with bend-ins and whatnot. Can you talk through what all that stuff means?
Yeah, well, I mean...
For the bike lane. Again, so you're trying to prioritize... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, please. I was actually going to kick it over to Dawn. Because Howard Avenue is one of the projects that she's working on. You know, really, really quickly on Howard Avenue, though, you know, it's a... There are many things that we're doing to Howard Avenue. First of all, it's a pavement rehabilitation project.
Right.
Probably first
Regional
and foremost.
Funding.
You know, it's state funded. We've got a lot of curb, a lot of, you know, there's some sidewalk improvements, some, you know, sort of your more typical improvements. But we're also working hard on trying to take the bike lanes that we have there, and especially at the intersections, providing a little more protection for the... for the cyclist. At some of the intersections along the street, we'll do something called bend outs, where the cycle track at the intersection dives behind a protective island. The island provides two different benefits. The first is obviously the cyclist is a little more separated from the traffic and is also sort of a little more ahead in the sight line of someone who is turning. So they won't turn into the bicycle. Also, they act as floating pedestrian refuge islands, similar to the ones at Long Wharf. So pedestrians will be able to cross the cycle track, stop behind the island, be still protected from traffic, and then probably have a crossing distance across Howard Avenue that's about half of what you see right now.
And having an island like that puts it further out in the road, which calms traffic even more than the traditional bump outs that we've been using.
Correct.
The bend out islands, I was trying to find a good image and whatnot. You can see them on NACTA. You can also see them in the Mass DOT, if anybody's out there, like Brian Tang, Mass DOT manual for separated bike lanes for, that came out last year. That one is kind of what we used as some of the benchmarks. I believe at 4th Street or possibly 2nd Street, you're doing a bus bulb. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, we're looking
bus at bulb bend out island,
basically. 2nd Street doing a bus bulb.
And that's where Eddie's food center is. That's where my local, frankly, closest place to get a gallon of milk or a six pack of beer. That's where I walk up to, or I bike up to usually, because it's a, you know.
You buy those two things at the same time?
You know what? Man's got to eat. Neither of those are food. I guess milk is considered a food. All right. So we got a couple. So tell me about the bus bulb and why, how did we go about, yeah, why there?
Because you asked for it there.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's...
Sorry,
Yes, but why? Why do I ask for things? Sometimes it matters.
You know, that's a question we all know.
I have a lot of thoughts running through my mind, so sorry, I'm having a hard time figuring out which one.
Well, I think most of all is you have a very active bus stop there. I think it also the road geometry is conducive to it there. We are still checking it on auto turn. Auto turn, for those that are not in the business here, is the fancy software that allows you to drive virtually any vehicle on your computer through an intersection and you see if bad things happen, like, you know, the wheels wind up in someone's front yard or things like that. So we're still analyzing that part of it. But, you know, it's a spot where, you know, there's a significant amount of bus ridership and, you know, it's a place that would be very conducive to that kind of thing. And also, you know, bus bulbs really provide a safe and well-lit spot and a designated spot for people to wait for transit.
All right, I know we're moving along pretty good. So I've got a couple more questions from online. Thank you to Alicia Santilli to check in. She wanted to check in about the Common Ground crash from the other day. Tragic. We also had a pedestrian death. Someone was killed at Kimberly and El Grasso Boulevard, which is, as Don's face is showing, it, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, even though we identify problems, we just can't move fast enough. That's presently a community connectivity grant application to add sidewalks to El Grasso Boulevard. Our hearts go out to the family from that tragedy this past weekend. So the another question coming in with respect to more infrastructure there. Let me see. I'm losing all the comments. There's so many comments. Folks wanted to talk a little bit about Farmington Canal Heritage Trail, and this is not a plant. I did not plant this question. I swear to goodness. It's just the feedback loop is very constant and pervasive in our city, and we love it that way. It's one of the three greatest reasons that we're the greatest, is the everyone's one touch away from
GSCIA.
Mayor Hart. That's right. That's right. One of the three reasons we're the greatest is because everybody is empowered to take ownership of projects here. Aaron Good from the Friends of Farmington Canal Heritage Trail asked, I probably got that wrong, Greenway maybe, asked about, can we expand the pilot crossing we installed at Webster and the Farmington Canal up the line? And this is not a plant, I swear to goodness. But first,
I think the short answer is yes, we can.
Okay, but let's, I know, that's the punchline is, yay, good government. Let's first start with Webster and Farmington Canal line. Tell me about the project, where it came from, why it came from, and the bioswale that's next door.
Actually, interestingly enough, it came from an issue we were having where we had a lot of high speed crashes into the house right at the T intersection of Webster and Winchester. And, you know, I think there are actually a bunch of New Haven Independent stories on it, and pretty significant, you know, people jumping the curb. And, you know, I think there was one, I sort of this image in my head of this SUV that's just sort of sticking out the side of the house there. We wanted to put in something to slow people down before they get up the short little hill there on Webster to Winchester, and they have to take that very sharp turn. So, you know, the Farmington Canal was right there. It made a lot of sense that we could solve a couple problems in one shot by putting a raised crossing there. Our own DPW built that crossing, did a very nice job. We had a couple of new techniques in that job. Who designed it?
Yeah.
I believe it was Dawn, right?
And Zach Shapiro.
Oh, and Zach Shapiro.
So that's an in-house project management, planning, design, and construction project.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And who built the, and why'd you have to put the bioswale next to it?
Because the raised crossing prevented the water from getting to the catch basin at the corner.
What water? Just kidding.
Only when it rains.
Only when it rains.
Yeah, and actually we had a little friendly wager, if you will, in the department Well, it wasn't
because there's not a bioswale on the other side, and you would imagine that the water on the other side also got prevented from getting to. But we used a hollow curb there, so the water actually goes through the curb, through the bump out into the.
What's the pipe? Six inches? 4 inches?
Yeah, I mean it's a 6-inch pipe. I mean it's PVC? Actually the whole curb.
The whole curb
is hollow.
Yeah.
PVC curbing?
No, it's precast concrete. It's a hollow precast concrete curb.
So one of the questions from one of our dutiful listeners was, can you talk a little bit about bringing projects in-house? But let's do that while we go up the Farmington Canal line and talk about other crossings that we're going to focus on in the next month. And we identified, because of the crashes and the complaints from the neighbors and alders and residents,
yes,
three cars went into that house. We identified it as a priority. We staffed it out, and then we staffed out the construction, and then did Merge do the bioswale with URI?
Yeah. No, our DPW.
DPW
worked
again
on that. Yeah. We had to do some maintenance and some repairs to it, and Merge and URI partnered on doing those repairs.
So that's a lot of in-house stuff. Did you do the floating bus stop design in-house? I think so, right? So,
yeah. Chris Flanagan in our office has been really crucial on doing a lot of traffic calming projects.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that one of the things that we look at is, you know, we have talent to do some of these things in-house. We don't exclusively do things in-house. We try to be very aware of our limitations as to what we can and can't do, both in terms of time and also expertise. You know, certainly as a city engineer, and I think our department really feels this way, is that, you know, no matter who designs it, whether it's a consulting engineer or us, we need to be involved in the design process to a point where we fully understand the project. You know, one of the things is I was, a young engineer and started working at the city and working actually in a consulting company. I'd go to these public meetings and you would have all the city officials standing in the back and the consultant would be up front explaining things. And I think that, you know, I really like to show that the city and the experts that the people of the city of New Haven have hired, you know, take ownership of these projects. So we really like to do the presentations ourselves and really be involved. And we view consultants not as these people that, you know, are turnkey where we say, here, go design this, but rather an extension of our team. And I think that's really the strictest sense of what a consultant is they are an extension of your team.
So then moving up the line, you know, we've been working in a mixture. We've used SCROG, county government, whatever, funding to do a transportation planning study. So there was a lot of calls in New Hallville for one-way to two-way, change our street grids, this, and then the speeds are crazy, this, that, and the other. So we worked with the community over the last 2 years to do a typical, a little extra effort, I would say, a little New Haven style typical planning process with our management team, plus neighborhood events and this, that, and the other. But we could never really get to go. And part of the problem was in the work our consultants were doing, which was phenomenal work. We got to neighborhood greenway streets and we wanted two-way access for that sort of stuff. Folks were concerned about changes to the geometry of the roadway with respect to anything taking out parking. So, even a bioswale, you know, like a mid-block bioswale that was sort of bumped out or something like that. You know, folks were really concerned. And that's a really good point because we had to listen to the real needs. And in the end, what we decided on through two big community meetings, one in May, one in June, where we still couldn't get to a consensus. We did get to consensus about speed humps. And so we're going to go out there and throw after doing data collection for 2 years, on surveys for 2 years, and community meeting after community meeting for 2 years, working with the electeds, working with two management team chairs, because the leadership of the management team changed halfway through the process. And we're going to go out and build, I think it's something like 15 speed humps. So we're finalizing the map, emailing it out to you, Kim Harris, later today, I promise. One of the great things about doing in-house design and collaborative team environment work is that we identified some of the streets we're doing across the Farmington Canal Line. And throughout the last 3 years, we've been very consistently trying to piece together some focus and energy and progress. And we did Webster as a pilot, and then we'd like to do more. And you know, we've had a lot of projects going on, but you want to tell me a little bit about how you and Chris and Don were able to kind of scooch things over?
Well, right. So, you know, as we were looking at the locations that Doug's department through their study and with the neighborhood identified as places to put speed humps, you know, we had a couple of speed humps on, I think, Thompson and Ivy that were going to be right next to the canal line. So it made a lot of sense to move those over to the canal itself. I think we're going to go through and put in all the speed humps first, then we'll come back and put those raised crossings, either later this fall or possibly it may leak into the spring depending on weather. But we'll, there's a lot of speed humps out there this fall in October. You'll see, a lot of speed humps going out.
Anybody on Facebook Live sees our constant debate, like, oh my God, we've set a construction date to the public. We've got to deliver.
We are going to deliver.
On
speed humps, we told them the month of October, and there'll be plenty of speed humps in the month of October.
Anyway, it is always a constant struggle with outreach engagement. And the feedback loop for these projects, I think, is the one thing where we've noted and flagged our ability to continue to improve. And we want to use things like C-Click-Fix to kind of communicate to residents on project updates. And this is official now. Ray Willis is going to be joining our project team as manager of process improvement. He's our If anybody knows him in the office, he's our parking and evening supervisor, but also a league certified instructor for cycling. A bike commuter and someone who has been doing behind the scenes C-Click Fix and VOC workflow stuff for the department. And we're really hopeful that we can do a better job in 2018, really stepping up our communications game, because I think we're doing great work. My contention is that we're not reporting off good enough, and it's frustrating people that they don't know what's going on. Things like this help. So some of our most avid supporters are on the thread asking us questions, which we really like to be able to answer. But at the same time, you know, it's like we need more.
Well, there's a lot of different ways to hear about New Haven's infrastructure. One of those ways is right here on Infrastructure Thursdays, WNHH 103.5 FM, and streaming live on newhavenindependent.org and Facebook Live. So I think we only have a couple minutes left here, right? Maybe we can do some rapid fire things that are going on.
Sure. Allow me to lead if I can.
Okay, fine.
Let's start with, did you say fire? Because let's start with the firing range.
Right. Firing range going up. We got steel up. The firing range committee, all the residents who have been actively working on it for many, many years. They're going to be out at 10:30 on the 16th, a little site tour to see how construction's coming along.
What about hockey? I like hockey. You rink. Like hockey?
Painting the interior steel is starting next week. So that project is continuing on. We're looking for, again, opening next season.
We started this conversation with coastal resilience. What types of projects are going on in the water?
Well, I think that we had a nice little a small project, but one right on South Water Street.
Yeah.
I'll
get there. We'll get there. Let's talk about South Water Street. Let's pay a little more extra attention to my street, please. Go on. No, move to the pier. Move to the pier.
So we're also working on the Fort Hale Pier. We've actually driven piles halfway out. It's a 360-foot-long pier. We're about halfway out, driving the pier, the piles for the the walkway out, and then we have the T-head to do afterwards. So construction's going very well out there. You'll see a nice crane out there and watch the large timber piles going in.
What do you have? That's any? What I'm thinking. Yeah, that's the only other one.
So how's I think you guys are doing some line striping and stuff in support of pavement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we got Thompson Street. We're working on making that two-way in addition to the speed humps over there. Pavement rehabilitation and the work that DPW is doing is out the bid right now. So that makes our crew a lot faster. We have great news for, I just got an update this morning from the resident at Ferry and, anyway, we're doing a bunch of new crosswalks in Ferry Street in the Fairhaven area, some school bus stop areas that were kind of faded. One thing that we're going to love for our listeners to do is take out your phones, go to C-Click-Fix, take a picture of your crosswalks that you want done, take a picture of all four legs of those crosswalks in the notes section. That'll really help us do a better job of data aggregation. That could really help us. We're really trying to think through how to get more information and a qualitative and quantitative information for our crosswalks, because it's one of those things that we outsource it, but it does take a lot of staff time for us to produce that list. So
you also have a pre-construction meeting coming up for Six Signals, right?
Ah, that's right. That's right. LOTSIP. We have, through some regional funding, we're going to be replacing Six Signals and then four in CMAQ and eight in the downtown in 92666. The Six Signals that are out to bid or out for construction are ones at Sargent and Halleck. That's right at the New Horizons School. So that's an interesting one where you actually have a signal there that's a flashing light at the moment. We're going to replace it for a full-on pedestrian to really enhance the signals for pedestrians.
I think the headline here is really all of these will have much better pedestrian accommodations. Also, they'll be on our traffic signal control scheme. Right. So, also for traffic, better timing and better throughput through our system, right, as well. But the headline, better safety for pedestrians, that's, and right, all users of the road.
I think we've got a lot of changes coming for buses, and there's a lot of improvements coming from CT Transit. New bus fleets coming. You see a lot of buses in test. We always hear about the GPS getting worked on and whatnot. But for us, if you're going to be a transit city, you need to be a walkable city. If you're going to be a bikeable city, you have to first be a walkable city. So for all of us here in the streets game of New Haven Independent Radio, We're all believers in being a walkable city first.
So one last question, Dawn. Oh, no. What do you love about working with the city of New Haven?
We do have a lot of job postings in there. We are always recruiting to improve our team. We do have a vacancy as a parking evening supervisor, parking enforcement evening supervisor.
I like getting to do a range of projects in one area, the place where I live and work and play, and it feels good to be able to give back to my community.
And with that, it is the wrap-up of another wonderful episode of Infrastructure Thursdays here on the voice of New Haven's infrastructure, WNHH 103.5 FM. And Doug?
This is Doug House-Layton and Giovanni Zinn signing off. Thank you, Don, for being our guest here on Thursday at WNHH
Thanks
Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good day, everybody.
Keep the...